Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth. Retirement planning is more than just saving money. It's creating the life you've always dreamed of with financial freedom. I specialize in retirement and legacy planning. Build a strong financial portfolio so you'll enjoy retirement and leave your family a strong financial legacy. Secure your financial freedom. Call me, Mike Venaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc. Member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And I am very happy that we'll be back at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, December 20th for our next live show a little bit over a month from now. Mark your calendar. I saw my buddy John Gallagher and his wife Nadia, his beautiful wife Nadia, the other night. John confirmed Santa Claus will be at the Grand. All right? Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. This is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, where you should use promo code Zeoli when you book a midweek stay. You'll save 25% from now through the end of the year. Book direct at GrandHotelCapeMay.com. My question for my buddy, Dr. Wilfred Riley, the author of the must-read book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, is have you found your favorite viral moment of a white woman melting down over Trump's election yet?
I don't know. I think my favorite viral moment actually might be Gabrielle Union saying that she'd never been more offended in her life and she was leaving Twitter and Facebook today. But she's not a white woman, so I don't know if that counts. Mm. I don't see color, though. I don't.
Yeah, you're colorblind. That's true. That's a good one.
Colorblind, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But she said that on social media, that she's leaving the social media platforms?
Yeah, she said something like, I'm not saying this for attention on Twitter and Facebook when I'm leaving Twitter and Facebook. I mean, there's an element of humor to it. Like, is that permanently going to happen as a, you know, upper middle class woman of whatever color? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, probably not. Not so much. I do miss Don Lemon on Twitter, though, already. It feels like it's been minutes since he left. I don't know how I'm going to cope.
Well, he's another one of those histrionic, like, wealthy people of whatever color. He did the announcement, too, right? The written letter on Twitter, like, I'm gone from this site. I'm going to Blue Sky, a similar site with an equivalent number of followers. I mean, like, the whole thing is pretty silly and pretty performative. And, you know, he's going to check back in. You know, so this stuff is absolutely meaningless. He's still on Facebook, Blue Sky, TikTok. But, you've seen a lot of these statements. Now, I don't know why this is happening, because Donald Trump doesn't own Twitter and Elon Musk has owned it for 2 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this kind of celebrity behavior doesn't have to make sense. It just has to be dramatic and visible.
Yeah, it's like Jason Bateman selling his Tesla because he felt like it was a giant Trump bumper sticker, you know. The hatred for Elon Musk I love, because here's a guy that made the electric car palatable to the masses, something that most people could actually afford, which I thought was, they said was good for the environment anyway. Now they hate this guy more than they hate Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, there's sort of a weird difference between performativity and reality. So I'm not a big electric car booster, because in Kentucky, they're just powered by pure raw coal. But I mean, if you want to talk about doing things for the environment, like trying to develop an electric car prototype is definitely up there. And Elon Musk did that. He's also trying to move some surplus humans off the planet with SpaceX. So you've got his actual accomplishments, but then you've got sort of, he lets right wingers talk on Twitter.
Right.
And if you're a certain kind of liberal person, you have to think that's worse than anything else. So you see this histrionic backlash to Elon. And the thing is, like, he doesn't not let left-wingers talk on Twitter. I mean, the worst left-wing accounts are as obnoxious as the worst right-wing accounts. They have names like White Male Cope and Young Communist League and millions of followers. It's just that now you can do that on the right, too. You can be an obnoxious jackass reader party.
Help me understand something. As a political science professor, help me understand something, which is the political spectrum. You know, I remember learning about this in college in my poli-sci classes at the University of Maryland, and it never really made sense to me, the political spectrum line, because they kept saying that the further right you go, you descend into fascism, but I mean, it seems to me that the people that I find who are more conservative than me just want to be left the hell alone. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and they don't want any government. And it seems like that fascism involves a very strong centralized federal government, which is something that the left loves. And they're very terrified of losing, and they love bureaucracy. So I don't really understand how the concept of fascism became something that has been equated with the far right. Can you help me understand this exactly?
I don't think it makes any sense. I think actually a better political spectrum is the four square quadrant, if we're going to actually get wonky about this, that you see sometimes on socials, where the top corner is authoritarian right, then you have authoritarian left, then you have, you have the libertarian left and the libertarian right. And I think that most conservatives in America are kind of libertarian right, actually, to a degree that's kind of weird, where people online will say things like, yeah, I'm right wing, but I'm pro-choice. Right. Or, you know, just you see the Liberty flag, the Gadsden flag, like stuff before there was America, like just leave me alone with my guns to grow my marijuana plants. but that's a specific sector of the right. And you do have the authoritarian right. You have some of the we never got to Hitler in the USA, but you have like sort of Franco types, House Un-American Activities Committee, although they did a lot of good, actually. But I mean, the authoritarian left is a big ignored sector of this. That's kind of my point. Like a lot of hardcore liberals don't just want to be left alone to have a kinky gay marriage or something like that. They want to mandate that every church recognize that marriage, for example. And that also takes a government.
Right.
A very big government.
Right. And a government that would crush individual religious liberties or the liberties of those churches who don't want to recognize those marriages, for example.
Yeah, and I think one thing we've been fairly bad about in the USA is recognizing authoritarian leftism, because the enemy was always, it was Hitler, and then actually it was the Soviet Union, so I really don't know why we've had this lapse. But okay, after that it was the Arabs that we fought in Latin America. It was very often some dictator goose stepping around with a bunch of, you know, brass fried eggs on his army jacket. And so the stereotypical opponent, at least in the movies written by our communist screenwriters, was this sort of guy. It was an Arabic or German, Eastern European, something like that, baddie.
Right.
And I think as Americans, we're kind of programmed to react to that. Authoritarian left, though, again, that's Lenin, Stalin, Mao. And I guess this is the point. There's been a lot less research about that. So there's a famous book called The Authoritarian Personality that's all about right-wing authoritarianism. Like, is your dad a fascist? Only in the past 10 years have people started looking at, if we just change the wording of the questions so that we're not asking about controlling communists or feminists, we're asking about controlling anti-vaxxers, would we not find a lot of left-wing authoritarianism? And it turns out we do.
You know, and the other thing, too, is that, I mean, like Hitler and Stalin were buds for a long time until Hitler needed the oil and then invaded Russia, which, you know, would turn out to be a big mistake, obviously. But I mean, it wasn't like Hitler invaded the Soviet Union for an ideological purpose. But yet history has kind of written it that way. Like he went in there to destroy Bolshevik communism. And so, like, you know, it's kind of like your point about the screenwriters writing this, like, you know, the commies were kind of the good guys in all this. But, you know, I mean, like that's not accurate. I mean, it's not like two things can be true at the same time. Like Hitler was a bad dude and Stalin was a bad dude. Like they were both bad dudes. And, you know, I mean, like it became that Hitler, who was a national socialist, became the iconic figure of the right is something I don't understand, I guess.
Yeah, so there are a couple things. Like, first of all, yeah, historically, great men that fought or evil men that fought were both very flawed in any kind of post-Christian religious sense. I mean, you don't have to say that either Cortez or Moctezuma was a nice guy. I mean, there's no reason to pretend that, like, one of them was in the right.
Right.
There were just wars all the time. I mean, the right of conquest existed until, like, 50 years ago. But the whole thing with Hitler, I think you did a good job of breaking that down. Like, there's some on the right that almost view Hitler and Mussolini as good guys because they fought the Bolsheviks, the communists. But they didn't do that because they had a problem with communism. They did that because they wanted resources. And also, Hitler killed 6 million Jews.
Right.
So there's that.
Right. there's that.
Bad guy, Hitler. He's got a couple check marks in his logbook there. But I mean, the flip side of that, though, is that, like, on the left, people try to present Hitler as the archetype of the right. And I even sort of just did that myself when I was making fun of these goose-stepping generals. Hitler was a national socialist. So, I mean, Hitler's policies were largely center-left. Like, he wanted to build a roadway network through Germany. Hitler designed the Volkswagen. He was actually pretty involved in that. He raised pay for the German army. So Hitler was not a conservative in the American throne and altar and leave me alone sense at all.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And that's what's been frustrating me about all this. And I wish there was more conversation about this. And so since you are the author of the book Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, and I actually said this to my friend the other day, I said I'm gonna bring this up with Dr. Riley because Stalin was a bad dude who killed what? I mean, how many people died in the purges and everything else? I mean, like, what, 12 million or something, right? I mean, he's also a bad guy, killed a lot of people, police squads. And I mean, the Germans had the Stasi, the East Germans had the Stasi. I mean, like, you know, the authoritarian countries. And then even after the war, you know, we had authoritarianism in East Germany under the Soviet Union. But my point is that in this day and age right now, when people are like, Trump's Hitler and Trump wants to cut the size of government, and, you know, put like people like Bobby Kennedy in charge of the HHS or Tulsi Gabbard in charge of the DNI. I'm sort of like, it's not like these are not like big Hitler moves, like talking about no more wars. And, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not really like very Hitlerian to say we don't want any more war.
Yeah, I mean, like, Bobby Kennedy and Tulsi Gabbard both seem like people that would be almost annoying at a social gathering. Like, hey, you want any of this weed? You sure? You want any of this? No, they seem like relaxed hippie types. Tulsi is literally from Hawaii.
Right.
I think if you're actually looking at that four-scale quadrant, like, Hitler would be at max authoritarianism and maybe slightly over the line to right from left, maybe on the other side by a little bit. But he's as authoritarian as you can get. I mean, like, people goose-stepping around, literally. Stalin would be at the left of the left corner, and he would also be as authoritarian as you can get, if that makes sense. Trump would be in kind of the center-right and not authoritarian at all, almost libertarian. So I think when people say Trump is Hitler, what they're saying is sort of, Trump's a big, cocky, charismatic guy that I associate with the political right. It has no other meaning. No one thinks Trump's going to kill the Jews. No one thinks Trump's going to invade Poland. No one thinks Trump's party is a labor party. There's no actual meaning. There's no there.
Yeah. I kind of wish he would invade Poland, though. I don't know. It's just like, or maybe Canada. That might be fun. You know, see how they stand up. I don't know how they'd hold up Canada. Definitely Canada. You remember the movie Canadian
Bacon?
These mid-range
countries have gotten away with too much.
The movie Canadian Bacon with John Candy is one of my, that's a movie I need to go rewatch again when they invade Canada. I'm laughing here. Dr. Wilfred Riley's with me. It's great to have you. You're such a voice of common sense. Now we've got a lot of people melting down and there's outrage and there's outrage over like some of Trump's cabinet picks. First of all, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wanting to go in there and challenge the conventional norms of big food and big pharma and, you know, artificial flavors and ingredients and dyes. I think this is one of those areas where actually the right and the left have a lot of agreement on this. I mean, I remember years ago talking about vaccines and I had callers on both sides calling up and screaming about them. You know, it's one of those areas where it's like Democrat moms and Republican moms, neither one of them want their kids having red dye number 5, for example. So I actually think this is one of those areas where Kennedy joining Trump's administration probably, and even just endorsing him, probably brought over a lot of maybe more hippie-ish kind of people who didn't like Trump, but were open to the ideas that Kennedy was espousing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, so Kennedy is a straight-up Democrat. I mean, Kennedy is a member of the legendary Kennedy political family. That's not a misnomer there. He was a guy who was running against Joe Biden in the Democratic primary until they backstabbed him the way they did Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. Kennedy polled at over 10% among both Democrats and Republicans. He's a serious guy for all his antics. And his whole thing was that he'd ally with Trump if Trump gave him a chance to launch his MAHA agenda, make America healthy again. I don't know how you'd abbreviate that.
I think MAHA.
But yeah, that's how you'd abbreviate it. I mean, yeah, it's actually not a tough question, but thanks for I was stumbling on it a little, you know, got an H in there. But anyway, so the thing with this, I actually don't have a problem with this appointment. People keep talking all this wild stuff about Trump's appointments. Some of them are clowns. Like, I have no personal beef with Matt Gaetz. He's a funny guy. I think we both met him. But, you know, Gaetz just got out of some legal trouble himself. It turned out there's nothing underage going on or anything like that. But should he really be the attorney general if he just got out of court? I mean, you could debate that one. But Kennedy is a well-known environmental lawyer, actually. Tulsi Gabbard is a former congresswoman, not a Russian spy.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Hegseth is actually the one that I think is a sneaker good Pete, not just defensible. I mean, Hegseth was either a major or a light bird colonel in the Army, 2 combat decorations. He went to Princeton. He went to Harvard. So there's a lot of talking about, like, oh, he was on television. But, like, Nick Saban's on television. That doesn't mean you can't hire him as a football coach.
Right.
The thing with RFK is that I actually don't know if Democrats are going to get on board with him because now he's working for Voldemort.
Right.
So, like, we've become so politicized that, yes, everyone's, like, crunchy girlfriend has gone through the, like, it was if and when we have kids, I have a real problem with that 17 vaccine schedule. You know, you can talk it down to 6. Like, it's an actual a thing. It's in books.
Yes.
But are they going to stick to that now that Kennedy is in the Trump administration? Because it's going to be really weird to see hippies saying things like, you know, just get on board with Pfizer and Halliburton. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, no.
The experts say.
It's true. I mean, I remember
Acme Pharmaceuticals has told us why we are. I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I remember years ago, one of my wife's hippie friends, I asked her one time during when the vaccine debate raged up after Rand Paul made whatever comments he made years ago. And I asked her about it. And, you know, she just had a kid and she said she was a slow vaxxer. Now, she's exactly in that category. So I wonder, like, is she still a slow vaxxer now or is she like all in? Because like I'll read you Elizabeth Warren's tweet today. RFK Jr. poses a danger to public health, scientific research, medicine and health care coverage for millions. He wants to stop parents from protecting their babies from measles. And his ideas would welcome the return of polio. I mean, like, my God.
Well, RFK has questions again with the 17 vaccine schedule for babies. I'm pretty sure he's for the polio vaccine. I think that's settled.
Right.
Like, I was with a bunch of black and white dudes, and we were debating Abe Lincoln's legacy over some adult beverages the other day. And someone was like, everybody shut up. He's on the 5. It's over. And that's the status of the polio vaccine. Like, it's not going anywhere. I'm not an expert on this. I'm the fake kind of doctor where I can tell you about like the feminization of poverty. I'm not a medical doctor, but like I do think that in practice, when you look at these vaccines that we give to very small kids, I think the 15 to 17 is like year one, actually. You know, and those are big adult sized needles. There is a question of, you know, what were the rates of some of these diseases like pertussis before we started doing the full modern schedule? Like, was this an epidemic? Were there people dying of whooping cough? I'd have to look at that.
Right.
You know, if it turns out that we are just becoming incredibly safetyist would be a word about this, like we are about so many things. You know, I wouldn't mind trimming that down a little bit. I don't think most people would. I wouldn't mind stretching that over 5 years before you go to school as opposed to doing it in 1 year. The issue is all this is becoming politicized. Like, we saw this under COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, the weirdest thing about COVID-19 was that the vaccine, which is bad for young male athletes, but frankly, pretty good for everyone else, everyone over, like, 40, that was developed under Trump, who pointed out its limitations. No one will mention now that Operation Warp Speed took place under Donald Trump.
Right.
Trump won't mention it because it'll lead to automatic backlash from like the rightier right. You gave us the clot shot. You bet. I mean, that. So there's that. And then on the left, people just won't give him credit. So all right. These people walking around with 2 masks on who still get vaccinated for COVID. That was our guy that did that. You know, the big GOP president was in charge that full year. It's just that's taboo for them to say. So we're going to get into a lot of these weird situations around RFK as well, you know, around Tulsi as well. Tulsi, again, is a Democrat.
Right. I mean, she left the Democrat Party and she's, you know, become a Republican, but she was a Bernie Sanders person at one point.
Yeah, okay. Two days ago.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, yeah, and you brought up
Tulsi.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, there's some basic loyalty oathing that's going to be demanded. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard's not a leftist, but no, Tulsi was a popular elected Democratic congresswoman, and it's sort of like when you get to the top, like you and I might be near it, but like when you get to the Congress level, people have 2-second memories that really reflect around what's the last thing you've done for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you can get people looking at Tulsi Gabbard and saying, well, that is a right-wing, turncoat, anti-feminist woman. And it's just sort of like, no, it's the same person who's moved like X% to the right.
Right.
But again, like it, when you have that hyperpartisan attitude, part of the reason for that politically is that it makes it much harder for people on your team to say, okay, Tulsi's on the other team. I might move with her. They're pretty close.
You brought up Bernie Sanders before, and I was thinking about, I read this piece the other day about how Bernie Sanders could have won in 2016 had the Democrats not crushed their own movement with him. Because let's face it, Bernie was never a guy they could control. But Bernie and Trump have a lot of similarities in terms of their appeal, their populist appeal. Obviously, economic policies, they're very different in a lot of ways, but their populist appeal was there. And there was a moment in American political history where somebody was going to come along and seize this populist moment. Bernie was out there doing it. And then the Democrat establishment came in and, you know, chopped his legs off and put Hillary Clinton in. And then they did it again in 2020. And so, you know, a lot of this that they're looking back, they're like, well, why did Democrats lose? Why did Democrats lose? I mean, the way I see it is you guys crushed your own movement. And then a lot of those voters had nowhere else to go. They weren't voting for warmonger Hillary Clinton, who gave us, you know, whose husband gave us NAFTA. They went to Trump. I mean, that's pretty much what happened, I think.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about this is the Democrats and the Republicans both have some points. I mean, I'm obviously more Republican. But if you put Bernie and Trump's 10 best ideas together and called the candidate with them like Bill Reagan or something, that person would win two consecutive elections by a very large margin. Like if he campaigned on clearing up the healthcare system a la Bernie, MAHA a la RFK, close the border a la Trump, less crime a la Trump, no Soros prosecutors a la the guy who beat Gascon. Like someone who just took all this and said, I'm not running on a partisan platform at all. I'm just going to do this. And then I'm going to retire back to my horse farm like General Grant or General Lee. That person would be unchallenged for as long as they wanted to run and then send a vice president forward and so on. So, again, it's unfortunate that we're so partisan that that's difficult to do. But, the Democratic side of the populism, the person that best represented that was almost certainly Bernie. And Bernie was formally taken out. Like, I remember in 2020, like, Big Jim Clyburn went into a room, the legendary Black South Carolina boss man, went into a room with, like, Pete Buttigieg, and like three of these other candidates, I think Warren, Klobuchar, and came out at the end and said, like, if Biden's willing to give up some small positions in the cabinet, like these people are out of the race. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. I mean,
it was organized stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly was. I mean, it was and it happened like dominoes, too. But they kept Elizabeth Warren in to stop Bernie's whatever support he had left after that. So,
Oh, yeah, that's a good correction. Warren didn't leave. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was on purpose. I mean, I think I really do. So the other thing I want to, by the way, congratulations. I heard that Vice President-elect J.D. Vance is now following Dr. Wilfred Riley. That is pretty cool. That's really, yeah, look at that. The Veep is following you. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about that is J.D. Vance is like an internet guy. So he's actually followed me since a little after maybe Hillbilly Elegy, the movie. Like I commented on some of his stuff when I started writing books 4 or 5 years ago. And we've like talked online. J.D. Vance has actually gotten in trouble for that because he's followed a lot of the popular accounts on the internet. Like he followed an account called Mid Castiza of the Day, which posts like an average but fun looking Hispanic woman every day. So some account doxed J.D. Vance's Twitter likes, and just a lot of them were funny. It was like, why are you liking Dr. Roller Gator? You know, why are you liking Mid Castiza of the Day? Just all this sort of stuff. And J.D. Vance is just like, I'm a guy with a computer. Like, what? None of it's porn. What do you care? But I remember that being a funny thing, that he enjoyed a number of the accounts that were on there. James Lindsay, that kind of thing.
Peanut the Squirrel. Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch invoked Peanut the Squirrel during a Federalist Society event, and he said something to the effect of, like, you know, we see too much of this stuff happen with our government. I actually think the Peanut the Squirrel thing was a big cultural moment and probably got a lot of libertarians to say, all right, the hell with it, I'm voting for Trump. You know, like the idea of the cops coming in and holding this guy down for 5 hours like a terrorist and then killing his pet squirrel and his pet raccoon. And, you know, here you've got Justice Gorsuch, who I think is probably the most libertarian of all the justices up there, saying, like, this is he said, you know, this is too much of this. It's too much of this stuff. We see this all the time with government. And yes, I'm speaking of Peanut the Squirrel. I've just seen too many cases like that. You have just the other day. Some of you might have seen one anyone in the newspaper, if the newspapers are to be believed. And yes, I'm speaking about Peanut the Squirrel. So, I mean, I think that was a real moment of kind of being like, man, we like the government is like, is there any place they're not involved anymore in our lives, you know?
Yeah, I think that was a top five reason I voted for Trump, actually. Like,
really? Wow.
You just... I generally vote Republican, but all the shouting candidates, Trump and Biden and Harris and Sanders, I mean, you know, give me a dull Cincinnatus. But I mean, in terms of the actual, like, how crazy that incident was, and let's not forget Fred. Fred was also murdered. Fred the trick doing raccoon.
Yes.
But yeah, this was a guy, and it was like almost a stereotypical like New Jersey type guy. Like he posted, he was an online content creator, heavily tatted, had a former stripper girlfriend, as I recall. None of that matters. But it was just this sort of like working class couple, and they had adopted these cute little animals that they obviously loved, and the animals had the run of their house, and they taught them all these tricks. And the feds kicked in the door in full Darth Vader's, took the squirrel, it like nipped one of them on the finger, so they shot it, and then they decapitated it to test it for rabies. And they shot the raccoon too.
Yeah.
So Fred is not secondary in this story. Fred's a big piece.
Agree.
But I think that a lot of people looked at this and said, this is absolutely insane. So you have some crazy law in the books that says you're technically not supposed to keep a wild rodent. I don't even think a raccoon is not a rodent. But so we're going to enforce this. This, again, is in like Jersey or New York, where
New York,
there are X
New York
number
State,
of murders
yeah,
per year.
Yeah.
New York State. Okay. Yeah, yeah, that's even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Chicago, and that's crap. That's twice the size of Chicago. So they went into they went into the house. They took the squirrel and they killed it. I mean, it's hard to describe how bizarre that is in an area that, again, must have 1,000 murders a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people want the government not to be able to do that. People don't want there to be a law against your daughter adopting a squirrel.
Right. And the same government that says your daughter can become a squirrel, but she just can't have one. You know what I mean?
I think that's...
Go ahead. No,
just very briefly, I think that was a big part of this. The contrast between that and everything from trans to the potentially renewed military draft. So you're telling me that at 12, my child can cut off their penis, and at 18, they can go to war, but they can't adopt a rabbit? Like, what sort of anarcho-tyranny is this? It's again, Daniel Penny, where, like, people...
Yeah.
And that's another big story, right? Where people are allowed to dance and sing and urinate on trains and start fights with you. But if you put the choke on one of them and it slips and they get hospitalized or they die... You suddenly face life in prison for self-defense. Mm-hmm. You know, you could argue about whether or not slightly too much force was used, but almost every citizen looks at this and any of these stories and says, that could be me.
Yeah.
What if my girl adopts a rabbit? Are they going to kill it? You know, what if a bum attacks my wife? I just defend myself, break their nose, break an eye orbital. Are they going to take me to jail for 10 years, let's say? So people are beginning to question the scope and reach of this government, and I think both of us have been for a while.
No doubt about it. And the last thing I'll mention is that the Amish, too, you know, when you've got Amish farmers getting raided over raw milk and raw cheese, and, you know, you see how the Amish voted for Trump in big numbers. And I think that also plays a big part in this, too. You know, it's like, leave me the hell alone, man. If I want to drink freaking raw milk, it's none of your business. And if I want to sell it and people want to buy it, like, you know, leave us alone. And I do think there is an awakening of this, and I think it's a very positive moment for us in that sense. It's a shame that it cost us Peanut and Fred. They are the Lexington and Concord of our time, but nevertheless, you know, here we are. So, Dr. Wilfred Riley, yeah. Always a pleasure, my friend. I wish I had more time because I had to get into Whoopi Goldberg and the fake story about the bakery. I guess we'll have to touch on that next week. I'm sure there'll be more to talk about then, but until then... Lies my liberal teacher told me, get the book today. He cleared up a lot today about the authoritarian left that you need to know about. And there's so much more that you'll want to learn about in the book. Lies my liberal teacher told me. And follow him on X, just like Vice President J.D. Vance does. At? You got to give us your Twitter handle.
At Will, WIL_DA_Beast, BEAST 630. Look forward to seeing people.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much. Absolutely. Have a great weekend.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rizzioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Now, we got to get that event going with him, DeSantis. What's the latest on that, anyway?
Greg was working on it, but I haven't heard any details.
All right, see if
recently.
You can circle back, to quote Jen Psaki. See if you can circle back. Did I just quote Jen Psaki? Oof, that's gross. All right, listen, relationships matter at Cherry Hill Volvo. You hear me say that a lot. Well, right now there's an incredible lease on the all-new, all-wheel drive XC90 for as low as $687 a month using all applicable rebates. Costco members save even more, up to $2,000 in additional rebates. Just see the store for all the details. Cherry Hill Volvo, we broadcast live from the Cherry Hill Volvo studios. They are our studio sponsor. They're great friends of ours, and Judith Krupnik is the best. And that's why so many people like myself are customers for life. We drive the XC90, and we love driving the XC90 because it's beautiful, it is stylish, and it is the safest 7-passenger vehicle on the road out there today. And most importantly, standing with Cherry Hill Volvo because they stand with us. And maybe you want the S-Class, made right at their plant in South Carolina. It's a wonderful place to go. Either way, Cherry Hill Volvo on Route 70 in Cherry Hill. Judith is my friend, and she will be there for you. You will have a great experience, guaranteed. Never any pressure. She always does the right thing. So stop in there today. Go there this weekend and say hello. Thank her for her amazing support, and check out a Volvo. Take a test drive. There'll be no pressure for you to buy it. I promise you that. People 5-6 times wound up going to Cherry Hill Volvo before they wound up buying a car. My friends, that's what happened to them. And they ultimately bought the XC90, and they love it. Cherry Hill Volvo, where relationships matter.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr. with Allsperity Private Wealth. Your retirement dreams can become reality if you have a plan. I specialize in retirement and legacy planning. We provide custom solutions to help you navigate through your finances today while helping you build a strong financial portfolio for tomorrow. Take control of your financial future. Call me, Mike Venaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC, advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, this is big. Yes, it is. Excited. Another great guest. Very excited. Wow, we have her anyway. She is former Deputy National Security Advisor to President-elect Donald Trump, the Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, and author of the upcoming book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. She is Dr. Victoria Coates. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Richie, great to be with you.
Great to be with you. Are you partying with Doug Burgum right now?
I'm pretty enthusiastic about the appointment. I want to actually go back and look at the authorities for the Department of the Interior. I'm trying to figure out why he wanted the Interior and not Energy. But I love this new Energy Council at the White House. I think this is exactly what we have to do.
Yeah, so this is unique, right? I mean, to have him do basically two roles here, but I am curious why there is no why he wasn't just then the Secretary of Energy. I'm curious about that. What do you think that is?
No, that's what I think we should figure out. I mean, I think they are looking at creating almost a National Security Council type structure for this energy group. within the White House. And for whatever reason, the authorities of the Interior Department are the ones that he wants. And so that may go to things like permitting and leasing, which is what I think is the most important for the for our listeners in Pennsylvania, for getting additional projects going in our Commonwealth, that might be under the authorities of Interior. So that'll be a technical issue, but the key thing is we have a fantastic former governor who's also a huge tech person. Mm-hmm. So he can bring in all of those pieces of it as well to weaponize. I know is a kind of a loaded word, but I mean, this is the tip of the spear against China. And I think President Trump is signaling very clearly right now, this is how he wants to do it.
A couple different things to chat about there. In that, the president said the electric grid, we've got to make sure our electric grid is secure and has the ability to, you know, be functional and everything like this. I mean, there's a big national security imperative there with that. He also brought up artificial intelligence and saying we have to win the war on artificial intelligence with China and others. And of course, artificial intelligence requires a massive amount of power, as we've talked about, which is why, for example, they're, you know, putting the other reactor at Three Mile Island back online now so that we can these companies can use that to power AI. So there's a lot to unpack there in terms of how President Trump is viewing this role and this intersection between energy, national security, and also, as he ultimately says, you know, to bring world peace.
Absolutely. No, and the Biden-Harris administration has been literally asleep at the switch on this issue for the last now almost 4 years, because they've been so obsessed with climate change, they don't want us producing power in an ample, you know, strong,
right,
you know, secure baseload way. They want us to be energy vulnerable. They want us to be reliant on foreign powers for energy while we try to develop solar and your favorite wind into some sort of reliable source. And it's just not feasible. It's not possible. And so I think what we're getting is a nice reality check from President-elect Trump, that he's going to come in and make sure that no American in 2025 should be energy vulnerable. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, all Americans should have plentiful, reasonably priced power of their choice. So if you want to have a gas stove, awesome, have a gas stove. If you want to have an electric car, like my brother who just doesn't like going to the gas station, good for him. He can have an electric car. My husband happens to be hoarding internal combustion engine cars. I never know what I'm going to find in the driveway when I come home, because he would prefer to have that kind of car. We can be free to have these choices in the United States in 2025, and that's what's being signaled here.
Senator Rand Paul is going to be the new chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee. I think that's pretty exciting. And he's also vowing to investigate the COVID cover-up as part of that. Obviously, you know, this brings us to China, and this also brings us to the question of China's role in everything, right? That all these various different things. So I guess my question for you is, where do we stand with China at this point in time, considering that Trump's going in there right now as president? He tangled with them last time in a big, big way and kept them in line, but this administration has kowtowed to China basically every single area. We know that. So what kind of changes can we expect going forward?
No, I think we can look at big changes, and I think it's really exciting that Senator Paul is going to be that chairman. And I would just point out that Senator Cruz is going to be chairman of the Commerce Committee, and
awesome,
Senator Lee is going to be chairman of the Energy Committee. So we have
great,
all of our strongest conservatives,
great,
taking,
yeah,
gavels. You know, and
love it.
10 years ago when I was, you know, serving with Senator Cruz, I mean, these were the outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for them, even to get a moment in a committee hearing was a big deal. Now they're going to take the gavel. So this is crucial for conservatives. And I think in terms of the COVID issue, you know, we were in many ways denigrated at the Heritage Foundation for having our bipartisan commission on the origins of COVID last year, which the conservative chair was none other than John Ratcliffe, mm-hmm. who's about to become head of the CIA. And so I think John will, in conjunction with Senator Paul, play a huge role in exposing what went on with the origins of COVID and, you know, holding China accountable. It's amazing to me that President Biden, you know, is off to Lima today to go meet with Chairman Xi tomorrow. Why that's taking place is, I mean, a mystery. But, I mean, it just shows you these guys can't get enough of communist China, and we need a new sheriff in town to tell them that we're not going to play these reindeer games anymore, but rather, you know, hold them accountable for their awful deeds that have cost all of humanity so much.
Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. A lot to chat about right now as we're talking about all these things. We're talking about a time right now where we've got outrage over Trump's various picks. I'm happy for Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence. I wonder now, will she be able to take herself off the Quiet Skies TSA program? Will she have that authority, you think?
Well, hopefully she won't be flying private for our public airlines for a while. But I think the key message about the Tulsi appointment is that we're really going to look into the overbloated surveillance apparatus that was developed primarily under the Obama administration. Under George W. Bush, you know, there were legitimate reasons to be deeply concerned after 9/11. About terrorist communications in the United States. But what was done under the Obama administration, I mean, was unspeakable.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many of us were on various lists of people who were okay to surveil. Like, why? What did I do? Why would I be surveilled? And so as American citizens, we all need to be concerned about that. And that's what I'm hoping Tulsi, who's a good friend of Heritage, dirty little secret, we actually like her a lot and have promoted her in her book, even though she has been a Democrat for a lot of years. You know, this is a really wonderful mandate for her, and I think really, really important.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, she's a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army Reserve. Member of Congress, she served in combat. I mean, I'm very fond of her as well. She's been on the show a bunch of times over the years. I find it disgraceful that people like John Bolton are saying she's got sympathies for Putin or that she's a Russian asset or the other nonsense here. But let me use that as a transition point to Ukraine, because I heard today Zelensky coming out and saying that under Trump, the war is going to come to an end sooner. Already people, the hysterics in the media are talking about, you know, Trump and Putin again. They're just trying to resurrect all the Russian nonsense. Where do you see things going with all that?
Now, I think President Trump's been very clear that he wants to put a lot of pressure on Russia. You know, all you have to do, Rich, is read Art of the Deal, in mm-hmm. which, you know, he lays out the fact that if you want to make a deal and you've got multiple parties, what you do is develop leverage over both of them. And so I think, you know, we obviously have leverage over Ukraine. I had some senior French folks in this week who were telling me with tears in their eyes that we had to ensure the ongoing U.S. funding of Ukraine, or else it would be a crisis of U.S. leadership on the international stage. I said the last time I looked at the war in Ukraine, it was in Europe. And I think France is also in Europe. So maybe y'all should, you know, be looking after your own backyard before you come looking to us for another check. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's what the president is going to be saying to the EU. And on top of that, that both sides need to come to the table and come to a conclusion that is acceptable to Washington and to Kiev. You know, I don't think President Trump has any interest in handing Ukraine to Putin, because he'll just go take a bite out of something else. But the key point here, and this is the point I made to the French, was, you know, you're talking to me about how Obama didn't enforce his red lines. You're talking to me about how Putin invaded Ukraine under President Biden. Guess what? That didn't happen under President Trump in his first term. So I think we can be pretty confident that it's not going to happen again. So that's where I would see that going.
Yeah, like, I mean, this the piece in the Wall Street Journal where you have Kurt Volker, who said, if you look at his first term, he had a very warm commentary towards Putin. At the same time, he lifted an arms embargo on Ukraine and kicked the Russians out of San Francisco and called it a spying operation. He threw out about 80 intelligence officers from New York and Washington. I mean, you don't hear about that ever. Nobody even talks about those things.
No, and Ambassador Volker would, by most people's standards, be considered a hawk, a traditional Republican. He's a very good guy. I've known Kurt for years. And, you know, he sees this clearly, that what happened under Trump was actually beneficial, not just for the United States, but for the U.S.-Europe relationship. And I think we can hope for that to happen again.
Let's ask about the other big issue, of course, is the announcement of Pete Hegseth as defense secretary. Obviously, the left hates the idea that he's on Fox News, but you're on Fox News a lot. I'm on Fox News a lot. And so, I don't know.
I hope that's not disqualifying.
I saw you yesterday. I was filling in for Jimmy Failey yesterday on his radio show, and I looked up, and you were on TV with Martha McCallum, I think you were on with. Is that right?
Yesterday was Jillian Turner, but they showed you right after me, because I literally, on the return, I could see you right after.
Oh, really?
Playing, I think from your Fox and Friends, I think they were showing some of the footage.
That's funny. Yeah. Look at that. Worlds colliding. I think Hegseth, what I like about it is that he's not he doesn't come from Raytheon or Lockheed. I mean, he's a warrior. He looks out for warriors. And I think, you know, one of the points that Jack Carr makes in his books all the time is that whenever a soldier does something wrong on the front lines, it's always at the behest of the Pentagon, but nobody at the Pentagon ever gets in trouble. It's always, you know, the soldier on the front lines who gets in trouble. And Jack Carr has pointed that out in all of his books. It's been a running theme. And I think that, you know, having somebody who was a warrior in battle, Bronze Star recipient, who will look out for the warriors, I think is a good thing, actually.
Oh, no, it will. And I actually have a freakish knowledge about the office of the Secretary of Defense, having worked as Don Rumsfeld's archivist for 5 years. And, you know, he being the actual, he will be the only Secretary of Defense younger than Pete. He was 43. Pete's 44 when they were originally sworn in. And I have no doubts that Pete is going to be confirmed. But also, like Pete, Rumsfeld served. He was a naval aviator for years. He only retired from the National Guard when he became Secretary of Defense. And so these are figures that can just really inspire a lot of confidence from the men and women in uniform. And I think the other thing Pete will bring is just a badly needed breath of fresh air through those musty halls of the Pentagon, where all of this woke nonsense has just undermined our military culture to such a degree. And his recent book, I mean, and this is the thing, Pete writes books. It's not like he's an idiot. He actually thinks very deeply about these issues and puts out his views in long form, in book form. And his book, The War on Warriors, about what happened to him personally, but then more broadly has happened to our military. This is critical. We have to get this done. We have to get all the DEI, all the transgender nonsense out of our military, return them to being a fighting force. He's the perfect person to do this. We'll need to get a really solid deputy in there who can help him run this building, this organization of close to 2 million people. But once we get all of that apparatus in place, I have a lot of confidence in this nomination.
And lastly, since you are the author of the book, which is a must-read book, I can't wait to read it. It's not out yet, but pre-order it today. The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. Where do things stand right now with the Middle East?
Well, I mean, the big update today is it looks like the Israelis actually, in their operation on October 26th, did hit a major Iranian nuclear site at Parchin and potentially have set back that program by a number of years, which would be a massive inauguration gift to President Trump. It would be something that would give him a lot more leeway and space and time to deal with the Iranians rather than having the immediate threat of Iranian breakout on his plate. So I think that is a very big development, and I think it really is a demonstration of why I wrote the book, The Battle for the Jewish State, why this is a war on both Israel and America, and a war that we should fight together, because, you know, that is one of the greatest things they could have done for the security of the American people, not just the Israeli people.
Well, order the book today, pre-order today on Amazon.com or wherever you get your books. It has a foreword from the new chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, Senator Ted Cruz. All right, my friend, we had a great win last night, so we can end it on a high note. And
It was tremendous.
It really was tremendous, right? Even especially on a Thursday night. Am I right?
So much sadness in Washington, because we were actually, Kevin Roberts' book is out this week, and we were at Kevin's party last night, so we were in D.C., and the sadness in D.C. was just pervasive. They thought they had it, and they didn't. So,
that's the second time the D.C. establishment thought they had it and didn't. But boy, I've never seen Joe Biden look happier. I don't know about you, but I've never seen that guy look happier and more lucid in a long, long time.
Like the weight of the world was off his shoulders.
And the guy that he rooted for won.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dr. Victoria Coates, have a great weekend. Follow her on X at Victoria Coates. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, we got a big fourth and final hour coming up for you, including something special for you. I'm going to talk to a veteran who has a wonderful adoption story that I want to share, and a book about it that I want to talk to you about. Obviously, both veterans and adoption, near and dear to my heart. But we have a lot of great audio for you. Whoopi Goldberg apparently claims she was kicked out of a bakery, but the bakery is denying this. And the other point that I want to make is that you're getting a lot of people on the left right now who are basically trying to create a shadow government. And that's the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. And I also want to mention to you, you know, we are at a pivotal moment in this time that we're living in right now. But the good news for all of us going forward is that we have ways, new ways to protect ourselves from the very spying that Dr. Victoria Coates was talking about in the interview. The government absolutely spies on us. Companies spy on us. We know this. There are hackers out there, scammers out there. There are people that are trying to get your data, sell your data, mine your data. DuckDuckGo is there to protect you from all of that with a 3-in-1 privacy solution called Privacy Pro. And I use it. I have it. I make sure my VPN from DuckDuckGo is turned on. I make sure it's on my phone. I make sure I use it whenever I'm on public Wi-Fi or even at my home Wi-Fi, so I want my data encrypted. But it goes beyond just the VPN. It also has personal data removal. So any data about you, your address, your phone number, email, any of that nonsense, gone. Personal identity theft restoration. If, God forbid, your identity is ever stolen, they're going to go fight and get it back for you. It's the protection you need, the armor, the battle against the hackers and the scammers, the identity thieves, the people that sell you like the product. You get all that for $10 a month with DuckDuckGo.com, and you get a 7-day free trial. So all you got to do is go to DuckDuckGo.com/1210 and sign up today. For $10 a month, you can't afford not to have this level of protection in this day and age. You have so many people who've had horror stories about having their identity stolen. So many people who've been hacked and scammed. DuckDuckGo Privacy Pro protects you. A 3-in-1 privacy solution for $10 a month? You can't beat that. And the 7-day trial, do it today. Go to DuckDuckGo.com/1210. DuckDuckGo.com/1210. Sign up today.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hi, I'm Mike Vanaria Jr. with Allsperity Private Wealth. No matter your occupation, whether you work for a big company or you're a small business owner, everyone wants to keep as much of their earnings as possible. I specialize in tax minimization strategies and retirement planning that'll help you build a strong financial future for you and your future generations. Call me, Mike Vanaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC, advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Oh, oh, oh. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.